Now, without further ado, one of our very own, my brother Anthony from Santa Clarita.
Thank you. Good evening, I'm Anthony. And you know, today I'm an absolutely grateful member of Al-Anon. You know, I want to welcome the newcomers. You know, I know what it's like to be new, and I know what my life was like before. And I'm so grateful for these rooms because over the next, hopefully next 50 minutes or so, I can tell you what my life was like growing up, because I'm an alcoholic. I'm a child of an alcoholic. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. And what it was like growing up, what the tools I got, how my life was like, and we're with like today is like in recovery at 10 years. You know, my Al-Anon born-on date is December 15, 2003, is when I first came to the program. And, you know, I want to say happy birthday to all the birthday people as well. You know, it's pretty amazing to watch all the recovery and watch these men go through this and other people that, to see where they are when they first got here and to see where they're at today, it's absolutely amazing and it's absolutely proof of the program where it works. And I want to thank David for seeing in me to ask me to speak tonight, because it's pretty amazing how, you know, we see the recovery in other people that sometimes we don't see in ourselves. And I'm grateful for that, and thank you, David, for seeing that in me. And I just want to go back to the very beginning. You know, I'm 50 years old today. I was, not today, just 50. I'm coming up on 50. Not today. Not today. You know, I was born into the disease of alcoholism. My father, from the day I was born, he drank. My mother and my father got married very early back then. My mom was 19, my father was 20. My father worked at Technicolor. He loved to drink and he loved to gamble, and that was a great place for him to work because they drank and they gambled there. And I can remember the earliest times as a little baby. You know, my father, he would take me to Santa Anita, and probably about 9 months old, he lost me in the infield. And he was in a panic, and you know, the security found me and returned me back to him. And that's how my father was. My father, you know, he did the best he could. And I know that today. And him and my mother didn't get along. My mother is an untreated Al-Anon. She, all the years I remember growing up, she was chasing him all over town, looking for him, doing everything that Al-Anons do. And my father was very self-centered, very selfish. You know, he cared the best that he could for us, and he did the best he could. And growing up, we didn't do a lot of vacations. We didn't do a lot of those things because he was too busy going to Vegas and just gambling. And my mother had a little sister. I was about 6 years old. My sister was born, and when I was about 7 years old, she was 1 year old, and I had to babysit her and take care of her because my mother was always out chasing where my father was. And you know, I grew up without a childhood because I had to grow up really fast. And you know, today I became a perfectionist. You know, when you're young like that, and you grow up in a disease of alcoholism, you got to figure out stuff really quick, and you got to have the right answers, because if you don't, a lot of bad things could happen. And you know, my mom and my dad, till I was about 13 years old, you know, they tried to do what they could do, and it wasn't working out well, and they weren't getting along whatsoever. And I came home when I was about, I'm trying to speed this up because I want to spend more time in the recovery part of it than in the end of the disease and what it was like, because you know, a lot of us can relate to this. And if you're a newcomer and anything I say tonight you relate to, you're in the right place. You're absolutely in the right place. And you know, I came home when I was 13 years old. I came home to a note that was on the coffee table. It was from my dad. It says, "You need anything, call me." And there was a phone number. I remember the number was 818-367, but I can't remember the last four numbers. I was devastated that I came home. My father walked out on us. You know, my mother would say things like, "Your father doesn't care about you. He wouldn't even put shoes on your feet." You know, my dad was very sick. He was really sick. And you know, I watched him get, he probably got like 3 DUIs that I can remember him getting. And unfortunately, I wasn't with him when he got those. And when my mom and my father split up, you know, my mother's an untreated Al-Anon, so it was a matter, it felt like weeks. She moved another guy in. And it was absolutely insane. And come to be my stepfather, he was an aggressive alcoholic, and when he drank hard liquor, he got violent. And there was numerous times that I was beat up by him. There's numerous times I see my mother get beat up by him. My mother would always walk around with black and blue eyes, or and she would always have an excuse, you know, she was on the coffee table, or whatever excuse that, you know, they come up with to try to cover up for the disease, because we know we're, you know, nothing, you know, before, as I share, you know what, I have a lot, today I don't have all the shame I carried before. You know, I was very shameful, I wasn't proud of how I acted. But this is just how I grew up in the disease, and these are just the tools as I share with you what it was like growing up, and I'm very transparent. I try to share you openly, honestly, because if I can't openly share, I'm cheating you out of maybe some recovery, and if I can't give it, can't receive it, I can't receive it if I don't give it away. And my, and living in that kind of the house, you know, I was still living, raising my sister. And my stepfather was doing, I was drinking, everything in the house was immaculate. The weekends consisted of basically like child labor. We cleaned and we did the yard. We manicured and it was absolutely beautiful. And if we didn't do it right, he'd be drinking and we would get hit pretty good. And you know what really bothered me is my mother never did anything about that. She always ignored it. And you know what? It came down to one day that I was 13 years old and my mother always talked bad about my father. And one day I said, Mom, I can't take this anymore. Because just a couple weeks earlier, I went past a few weeks earlier, my stepfather went in a rage and I went in a rage as well. And I'm only 13 years old. And I went at my stepfather just throwing punches, just windmills at him. And he ran out the house and he got in his Toyota 4Runner. He started backing out the driveways. I'm hanging on the door, punching him through the window at 13 years old. As he peels out around the corner, I roll off into the street. And when I get back to talk to my mother, she didn't want to discuss it, just like everything else in the disease. She didn't want to discuss it. And a couple weeks later is when I told my mom, you know, I can't live like this anymore. You know, there was sexual misconduct when I was a child from outside people, outside the family. You know, I was embarrassed from that. You know, everything that alcoholism has. And my mother told me, you know, she was, your father doesn't give a shit about you. Go ahead and call your father. He won't come. He never has. He never will. When I called down there, my dad had his girlfriend at the time. And you know what? He met her in a bar. And she was an alcoholic as well. And when I called down there, she told me, get your stuff together. I'll be up there in 30 minutes to pick you up. And I told my mother that. My mom told me, if I leave through that screen door, I'm never coming back. And you know what? I was scared to death. And you know, being a 13-year-old kid growing up in a disease, I had to grow up fast. And you know what? I was a baby at 13 years old. I see children today, 13, and I can't believe that I survived what I went through back then. And at the time, now she's my stepmother, she came and she picked me up. And I went down there, and you know what? The drinking was crazy down there too, but there was no abuse. My dad never hit me. He never hit me. Everything for my father was really fun and games. He never took anything serious. And he was more like a friend than he was a father. And I lived in that for a couple more years. And then when I started getting 17, I was having a lot of trouble in high school. I wasn't able to complete my classes. My 12th grade year, I dropped out. I just couldn't handle it anymore. It was just too much. It was too overwhelming. The disease of alcoholism in my family. My dad was an alcoholic, my stepmother. My mother remarried her third husband, he's an alcoholic. You know what, you know, our pickers pick the same people unless we get help. And you know, unless we get the meetings and hear about it, you know what, it's just normal behavior. I didn't know anything other than this, and that's just what went in our house. And it came soon enough that I was like 18 years old, I got a job out in Santa Cruz at Thatcher Glass. And it was just a regular entry job because I didn't have a high school diploma. And I worked there for a while. And then after a little bit of a while, she came along. And, you know, I couldn't wait to get out where I was at. And you know what? The only thing I wanted to do is I wanted to be the best husband. I wanted to be the best father to a child that my father wasn't to me. And it was about a year later, we got married. And about 9 months after that, we had my son, AJ. And the marriage, believe it or not, only lasted about 2 years. I was about 22 years old when I got divorced. And my sister moved back in with me again. And my sister's lived with me for quite a few years. And she's been affected by the disease as well. And she's been to meetings before and heard me speak. And she sat in the front row and she hears my story. And I could sit and watch the tears go down her face because she relates to it. And we can still make this, we can make eye contact, like me and Willie can just make that eye contact right now. And we know something's going on in the house. We have that contact we make, even still today, at almost 50 years old and 43 years old. And you know what? She's never gone to meetings. I talk to her about program, and she gets it through me. You know, it's like we heard tonight, it's by attraction rather than promotion. And when she's ready for it, you know, she'll come here. And you know what, believe it or not, 9 months after that marriage, she came another she, and she looked just like my ex-wife. And you know what, it was 9 months later, I got married again. And you know, we hear that quite a bit in Al-Anon. You know what, how you know in Al-Anon, you see the moving van, just the U-Haul just moves in and moves out. And you know what, and that is such the truth, because you know what, I didn't ever have the relationship with my mother. And I was always looking to have a relationship with another woman, but I never was able to have a relationship with my mother. So I never was able to get that mother-son relationship. And I didn't have a relationship with my father, so I didn't have the tools to be a father, but the tools that I had. And you know what, the grandparents, thank God for grandparents. Because you know what, they make mistakes with their children, but by the time they're grandparents, they've got it pretty figured out. And if it wasn't for my grandparents while I was growing up, you know, I thought of suicide. You know, I hear that means like, oh, people talk about suicide. I thought about that a lot because my life was so unmanageable. And the more it got unmanageable, the more I tried to control it. And, you know, believe it or not, it turned me into become a perfectionist. Because if I could do it good enough, you're going to like me better. If I had the right answers, you're going to think I'm smart. Just when I got in that second marriage, I was 23 years old. I went back to adult school and I got my GED at 23 years old. And that was a big accomplishment because I failed English throughout my high school. And it just was a really, I just couldn't do school. It was hard to get out of bed. Just my life was just hard to even come home from school. And sometimes I think going to school was a better thing than staying home. And my second marriage, after about 3 or 4 years into the marriage, we decided to have a child. And I had Cody. You know, Cody's today is 19 years old. And at that time, when I was in that marriage, I didn't see AJ, my oldest one, very often. I felt guilty. I didn't see him much. I was similar to my father was to me. I was pretty much exactly like my father was to me. And you know what? I didn't know how to do any different. It was very awkward for me. It was awkward to be around her. You know, there was always these rules and boundaries. And it was just a hard time. And I didn't spend a lot of time with my older son growing up in the younger years. I didn't know how to do it. And when I got Cody, I was total opposite with him. I was the parent that overachieved him. And me and his mother's relation, our relationship lasted 14 years, and our relationship affected my son a lot, the way we acted and the drinking that went on in the relationship. And you know, my ex-wife liked drinking a lot too, and when she'd get mad at me, when I ignore her, she'd lay on the floor in the bedroom and kick the walls like a 5-year-old. And you know what, I would participate in the drinking with them, but it got to a certain point that I was done and they weren't, and the whole family drank together. And and you know, God does for me what, you know, God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. And at 14 years in the marriage, I found out that she was having an affair. And I went to see a therapist with her. And I asked her, and I had phone records, I had all the information. And I asked her that day, I asked her if she was being honest or she was having an affair. And if she was having an affair, to be honest with me, and I could deal with that. And if she couldn't the next day, I was going to go divorce her. And then she told me at that moment I wasn't having the affair, and I got up and I thanked the therapist for the time, and I walked out. And what I forgot to say, with Cody, my youngest one, when he was 5 years old, I bought him a dirt bike. And I had this big idea that he was gonna race motocross because I enjoyed doing it. And he was really good athletic at 5 years old. And I went and did this being behind his mother's back, as usual. You know, I bought him a dirt bike and I gave it to him without even consulting with her. And you know, this kid became really good at dirt bikes. Starting at 5 years old, he raced until he was about 12 and a half years old, nonstop. He was sponsored by everybody, but I drove him too hard this time. Al-Anons are a person of extremes. It's hard to find that middle pendulum. I'm here, I'm all in, or I'm not. And I was all in with this. It was 2 days a week practicing, was racing on the weekends, we traveled. I rode this kid out, we did homework in the truck. I thought I was being the greatest father. And all I did was burn this kid out. And one day he had a concussion on the track because he would be launching 60, 70 feet at 12, 13 years old. And he landed wrong on a tabletop and he was out cold. And luckily he wasn't hurt. And the next week, some lady came up to me and she says, you know, I got a picture to show you. It was my son laid out on the track. And she says, see what you're doing to your son? And at that moment I saw, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing once again. My whole life I've been, you know, it's so frustrating when we think we're doing the right thing and again we're doing the wrong thing. And you know, and I'm a type of person that I punish myself mentally more than you could do to me, I do to myself. And my son got tired of doing it and we quit racing dirt bikes. And it's just the disease of alcoholism, it just gives us these tools that aren't usable. And just about all this time that's going on, just a little bit before this, when me and Michelle got divorced, it was probably 6 weeks later, I was a 24-hour spin instructor at 24-hour fitness. And my wife, Kim, was the other 24-hour instructor class after mine. And how this goes is, I really liked her and I knew I was getting divorced, so I'm the kind of guy that does it's a leapfrog. I just jump from lily pad to lily pad. I already know what lily pad I'm going to before I leave because I can't be alone. I can't be alone. And I'm honest with that. I can't be alone. I'm not good alone. I don't do well alone because I've never been alone. And I forgot to tell you, my wife would come with me to spin classes sometimes. My second wife, and introduced her to Kim, and Kim thought that I was single. And it was a few weeks later, I said, I'm single today, so let's go on a date. And it took me about 6 weeks of asking her. And she told me that she wouldn't go on a date. And then finally, she decided to go on a date with me. And, you know, they say when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And, you know, Kim was so different. You know, mind you, Kim had 14 years in Al-Anon this time. I had none. And, you know, saying that, you know, she had this amazing, when she talked, she had these things that we say in program, and I was so attracted to her. She was so different than anybody else, and the stuff that she says, I've never heard from anybody before, because I thought everything that went on in my life, that was normal behavior, because my neighbor, where I grew up at, I forgot to talk about, you know, I grew up in this house when I was like from 7 to about 12 years old till we disappeared. When my family was always gone, the house right next door to me, it was the same thing going on in the house, alcoholism. There's like 5 kids. I hung out there all the time. And with the beauty of the program, it was about 2 years ago, I was at AFG, and I saw a woman across the room, and I saw her eyes. I went up and I said, is this Debbie? And she says, who are you? And I said, it's Anthony. And that was the girl from 7 years old to 15 years old I used to hang with at her house while all of our parents was out doing the disease alcoholism. And she right away, she's been 20 years in program, and right away she's like, to response, he was there, he knew my childhood, he saw it all too. And you know what? God's got a plan and we find each other somehow. It doesn't have to be through Facebook. You know, it could be through someone on their Facebook. And the thing is about that as well, me and Kim started dating. And it was really rough at first. I was keeping really rough around the edges. And mind you, I had no program. You know, it was about 9 months into us dating. And she says, Because on Monday nights, I forgot to tell you this too, on Monday nights after the spin class, she would go somewhere and I would go with the guys after Route 66 and have a few beers and watch Monday Night Football. That's what we did on Monday nights after the spin class. And she went and did something else. And after about 9 months of dating, she says, I go to these meetings and Al-Anon, and I'm taking a cake. I would like if you come down and give me my cake. And you know, at this point, we're only dating 9 months, and I really want to be the good boyfriend. I would have done anything at that time. So going down and giving her a cake, right? Let's be honest. Going down and giving her a cake, that wouldn't be a big deal. And it was the Monday night Al-Anon Will Grow in Encino 8 o'clock meeting. And when we got down there, there was about 80 women and about one guy in there. It was a woman, it was pretty much a women's SAG meeting. And there was one guy in there. And I gave her a cake, and I heard everybody share that night. And everything I heard them share, the next morning when I drove to work, I cried all the way to work. Because I didn't know that other people really truly felt how I felt. Because I felt so dirty, I felt so shameful, I felt so just about everything in my life, just how it was, and you know. And what the people shared there the night and the love that I saw, I was attracted to that. And the next Monday night I went back, and maybe two Mondays after that, they made me literature. Yeah, imagine that. They made me literature. That was so, I was the second guy in the room with about 80 women. And you know, there's some really tough women in there, so don't worry about that. They have their own. And I stayed at that meeting for 1 year. And I started coming to the men's 7 o'clock Let's Rock, and I had a hard time for a lot of years in here because it's hard to sit with a bunch of men. It's much more comfortable to sit with a bunch of women, and it's very true. It's hard to sit with other men and be open and honest. And I would always come here and I would find reasons. Mm-hmm. Oh, do members share the wrong program? I'm out of here. I would leave for just whatever reason because it was too uncomfortable sitting with a bunch of men being open and honest. Because I couldn't do that. I wasn't there yet. So I was just going to a couple of meetings a week. And you know, our marriage after a couple of years was really struggling. I was going to meetings. I had sponsors, a few. You know what? I got sponsors. I didn't call them. I saw them at meetings. I felt guilty. I made small talk. I didn't show up to the brother meetings. I wasn't accountable at all. And you know what? That's what my life was still like. You know, and how it was going was fast forward. You know, my 29-year-old son AJ back then was 18 years old when we first started dating. And God's funny how God's got plans. I was just going to about a year of meetings. Josiah was my sponsor at the time, and I had parent focus issues with my son. And we had an agreement. My son, he was going to an outpatient rehab. He was going to continue to do his meetings to live with me. And if I found any drugs or alcohol on him or was loaded, that he was no longer be able to live in our house. And that we were moving to a new house, and Kim and I were moving in together as a family. And the night before we were moving, the whole house was ready to go. And my son threw a bunch of clothes in the dumpster. And as I was going to pick him out to give him to Salvation Army, Goodwill, somebody that would be able to use these good clothes, the drugs fell out, the straws fell out. You know what? God showed me he's still using, he's still not sober. And the next morning, we packed the whole house up. And I had the whole house packed, and I knocked on his door. I said, AJ, I said, I love you. I said, I'll help you, help you pack. I go, where are we packed? We're leaving. He goes, what about me? I go, you're still using, and I know it. And we had a deal. Where am I going to go? I said, you know, I don't know, but you can't come with us. And that was my sponsorship that Josiah told me. I could not bring him back if he broke those rules and taught me how to set boundaries. And that was the hardest thing, was setting boundaries with my son, because, you know, I loved him so much. And, you know, I got the first phone call when he was 15 saying, come get him. You can't control him. He's using and partying and doing everything he was doing. And you know what? I had him for a couple of years. And on one particular occasion, this is how alcoholism is, it was working good. He was getting to his meetings and doing his things. And we always want to believe. And this one morning, I had to go to work at 5 in the morning. This was getting to the very end of him living with us. And He told me to be home by 10 o'clock. I had to get up early, that he would get my little guy, my six-year-old, to school. And because I was separated at the time. And I got a phone call about 8:39 in the morning from my older son saying that he never made it home last night, leaving my six-year-old at home alone. And he got home in a few minutes and my six-year-old was okay. You know, and that's alcoholism. And I didn't know any different. And I had to move without him. And his grandmother came along and she put him in an apartment. He trashed the apartment. He ruined his welcome there. She felt guilty still for him. And she moved him down to his great grandmother's house. And he's been living down in Venice and he doesn't have a job. He drinks, he does what he does. And you know, his grandmother says she doesn't know what to do anymore because she sent him to every doctor there is. There's nothing more to do and she's given him 3 weeks to move out. Presently today, and wants to know that I need to get involved and I need to help. And I told her that I'm not going to be. And I said that I would get back to her in 24 hours because I need to talk to my sponsor about it. Because that's what I do today. I this brain's what got me here. You know, it's not going to fix it for me, and I need to talk to my sponsor. And when I talk to my sponsor about it, he says you're not going to take the safety net from his grandmother. And you know what? My son's going to be moving out in a week and a half, and I have no idea where he's going to move. And you know, my sponsor says, I get offered to take him to the Salvation Army, down to the LA Mission, or even sober living if he chooses. That's what we get to do today in program. My 18-year-old, back when he was 16 years old, and we were living together, we were living together, it was the four of us, it was our two younger sons, and me and Kim. And he wasn't doing good in school for years. And when he was 13 years old, he got in trouble in junior high for smoking pot in the playground. And he got expelled from school. And we moved to another school. And this is when I became overly proactive in his life. And I made every Friday we met with teachers. Every couple months was IEPs. We met with everything. And there were some months that his mother and him didn't even show up to the meetings. It was just me sitting there. And the principal was like, isn't mom and Cody going to show up? And I would break down in tears. I was so ashamed. I'm going to say, unfortunately, they can't make it today. I'm the one here. Because you guys teach me how to show up and do these things that are hard to walk through. And, you know, and we got my son into a smaller school that he could get help. And his mother in January, 2 years ago, was moving to Georgia. And we had a deal. In order for him to stay here by sponsorship direction, he had to go to school. He had to get somewhat passing grades, at least D's. We'll go for D's. We'll take that. And, you know, just work some kind of a program because the three of us in the house are working a program, no matter what that looks like. And when we went to school, we found out that he wasn't going to school. And what we ended up having to do is the following Friday, I went with his mother and I enrolled him and he went to Georgia. You know, we get to set boundaries and they get choices and consequences. And we get to the really good recovery part of this is 3 years ago, Kim's and my marriage was in such a bad place. The way I was acting, my behavior, because you know what, I get in fear, I go crazy, you know, I'm over compulsive. I am such an extreme person. I'll go from one extreme to another. And I called her on a Friday night on my way home from work, and I asked her, I said, what time are you going to be home from work? She goes, I don't think I'm going to be home tonight till later. I'm going to look at an apartment. I'm moving out. I can't take this marriage anymore. And you know what? On my third marriage, 7 years in almost. Again, I'm in the same place as I've been before. And you know, in the first 6 years I came, and this was 7 years in Al-Anon. And the first 6 years I came to Al-Anon for Kim. I didn't come for me. I was coming for her because I looked good. I got the meetings. I felt good when I went to meetings, but I was coming for her. And you know what? It's like alcoholics, you know, they don't just drink tonight. They plan out their drink. I'm a plotter and planner just like them. I cut and run as well. And you know what? About six and three quarters of my 7 years, my commitments were going. I wasn't calling my sponsor. I was leaving. My program was done. My marriage was in the shits. My life was just a mess, and I was done. And God works in special ways. And it was about 3 years ago, a couple weekends before AFG. And And what it was is that AFG, I that Friday night, I pleaded and I begged with Kim, please give me another chance. I'll work program this time. I want to do it for me. I really want it this time. And she agreed one more time to do this. And I got a new sponsor. I started working the steps. I came here for me today. I don't come for her, I come for me. And over the past, and then it was 3 years ago, our lives were done. And I'm happy to say that today, we're best friends. And how this has all gone over the 3 years is how this worked out. I was done leaving program. I was supposed to go to AFG, Plug for AFG, this coming tomorrow night. And I told Kim that I would show up for the luncheon. She bought tickets. And you know what? I got that morning. I had no intention to go on the luncheon. I was done. Kim calls me at 10:30 in the morning. She goes, have you left the house yet? Have you left the house yet? I'm like, no, why? She goes, I forgot my luncheon dress. I need it. Could you be here soon? So I had no choice. God had a plan. I got to the luncheon. I got her address. I wasn't staying at the luncheon. And as I was getting ready to leave, I came into my good friend, John Heido. I love him to death. I love John. And he hasn't seen me in a while, and he was concerned about me. You guys are all concerned about me. You know, it's amazing the love in this room, the concern that we have for each other. And John says, how you been? Let's sit down and talk. John saved my life. I talked with him for hours, and I cried. I was in such a dark place. I hurt so bad. My life was over. My marriage was horrible. And I got to hear Bryson that day at the luncheon. And you know what? And you know what I heard? You know, the odds are good. The goods are odd. And you know what? I totally understand that. And you know what? And I stayed there the weekend. I got to spend time with Jack. And I got to spend time with a lot of other people. I felt so at home. And it was a couple weekends later. You know, I went to the Catalina retreat. And I got hooked up with Betty Ann's group in the Woodland Hills Tradition 5 on Friday nights. And I became a World Service GR there, and I got commitments there. And I got my sponsor there, and I made myself planted there for a couple of years. And my life changed. You know, I had amazing sponsors over all my years. Had nothing to do with my sponsors, and they all know that. You know, it had to do with me not wanting to do a deal or look at my stuff, because every time somebody would call me on my stuff, I'd be like, a politician, I would talk another tongue and go another direction and be like, what was the question? And that's just what I did, because I don't want to look at myself. I don't want to be open. I don't want to look how I do things. And my sponsor Chris from over there, he says, the only way I'm gonna sponsor you, you gotta call me 90 times in 90 days. I'm like, well, everybody, it's 30 times in 30 days. You know what? I had to call him 90 times in 90 days. And I did. And I started working the steps. I got past 3 this time. I always got up to 3. I always got up to 3, and that was all I got. 3. Never got to 4. Never made a Searching and Fearless Mall inventory. Absolutely not. I was too busy taking everybody else's inventory. That doesn't happen. And you know what happened? You know what? I was able to sit down because I had nothing to lose anymore. I've already lost all my relationships. I've lost my marriage. My kids' relationships were not in a good place. I hit my spiritual rock bottom. And you know what? My sponsor helped me find my higher power. You know, I was so grateful to John. We prayed in before I spoke tonight. And that means a lot to me because, you know, everything that I'm speaking tonight isn't nothing I came up with. It's everything I got from all you guys. This isn't my wisdom. This is everything I've heard over 10 years in meetings. And it's just, and by working the steps, you know, my first 3 steps, you know, the first 3 steps, you know, I think are the hardest, because I think the hardest 2 things in program is accepting and letting go. You know, we can't let go until we accept it. And, you know, I had a hard time getting past that 3rd step. And when I did my 4th step and I was able to really sit down and look at what I did and see that all the tools that I had didn't work, and the tools I'm getting from this program today, and be able to talk to other people and put my hand up and share that I'm not in a good place. And this was going on. And when I get phone calls from like my mother saying, you know, AJ's talking about committing suicide. We need you to help my older son. I get to say, Mom, you know, I can't help you with that. I go, you know what? What if AJ kills himself? I get to say, you know, if AJ kills himself, We get to go to the funeral, but I can't crawl in the casket with him. And you know what the important thing about my recovery is, it was about a year and a half ago, me and my friend Bob, we opened a parent focus meeting up in Santa Clarita. Me and my friend Bob, we just got a flyer and got our directory and got our member number and we made some things. And you know, some nights we have 65, and our biggest night we had 85 people there one night. And we started this meeting and all these people came from all these different rehabs, all the parents. And we used to go speak on panels to all the parents and say, come try our meeting, come try our meeting. And you know, in the beginning, everybody just shared about rehab. And this past year or so, 3/4 of the people all have sponsors. They share recovery today. They're all working the steps. And sponsorship is so much the biggest part of my recovery, and just being open and willing. Because all we have to do, we come to Al-Anon, is be willing. And this past couple, 3 years, I've learned a lot of humility. I've learned a lot. And Kim and I, in our marriage, we've been working the traditions in our marriage. And those are huge. You know, it's just like a business meeting. You know, we all have our different opinions, and we're allowed to speak it. And it's okay, because, you know, the big book talks about, we get to listen to how other people feel. It's not right or wrong, it's just how they feel. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to do that today, because, you know, Kim and I haven't had an argument since December 30th of 2013. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. It's been almost 4 months. We haven't had an argument. And you know what? We both just let it go. We let God. And we just have a really fun relationship today. And you know, and the gifts of this program, you know, the school thing. You know, Kim's a great wife. And behind every good man is a good wife. And I'm so grateful for her, because she's put me in so many scary places, like college, for example. I've been telling her, she says, what are you going to go to college to take English? What are you going to go to English classes? I kept telling her, in a few weeks, I'm going to take the entry exams, assessment test. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So one day she gets me in the car, and she says, let's take a ride. And she drops me off at the college, says, you got to go that way. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she left me there. And 2.5 hours, I called her. You know, I called her, and she came back and got me. And you know, I've taken about half a dozen classes, and how my college career is going, my English that I failed all along, I've gotten 4 A's in 4 classes. I do college English. But my disease a year and a half ago was, I was getting 98% on my test. I was so upset. They weren't hundreds. I was so upset. I would come home to Kim. I would go to the teacher, say anything I do, I need 100. And the last semester, I got almost all hundreds. But you know what? You guys told me, I could have been a doctor if I wanted to. And I could be still if I wanted to, if I want to put my time to it. There's nothing we could do in here. You know, Kim's got these great ideas. I tell her all these things I want to do. And she makes it happen for me. I tell her I want to go to culinary school. And she says, one day, she says, next week, you go at 8 o'clock in the morning, you start culinary school. And I went weekends for a year, year and a half. And I was able to learn how to do culinary school to cook for her. You know? You know, you do these things, and I told her, and I was so envious. She was a scuba diver, and she got me set up at Sports Chalet to get my scuba diving certification, and we go diving together. And there's nothing that I can't do today in program that I just want to do. And you know, about 7-8 years ago, how my life was at work, because I practice these principles in all my affairs. This is what I do, all my affairs, not just in the rooms, because I can't get along with you guys just in the rooms. I have no chance outside the doors, no chance. And we were in Costa Rica. We were on a 10-day vacation because we like each other now. We had an amazing time. I tell you, we did everything from whitewater rafting to you name it, we did it. It was amazing. And scuba diving, everything. And I got lost where I was going with that. The job, okay, yes, the job. She's on top of it, that's why I just look at her and she tells me, the job. So I've been a distribution manager for my company for 7 years. I've been working for 15, and about 10 years ago, there was a plant manager job position that I applied for, and I was qualified. I was the first in line to get it, and the reason I didn't get that job, they told me, because of the way I treated people. And the way I treated people, I didn't get that job. And you know what? My relationship all showed that. I had to take a look at that. You know, I, it's the way I treated people. And we were in Costa Rica, and a thing popped up on the International Post, and my company I work for has 89 companies across the United States and Canada. And what happens here is a fleet manager position comes up. And I know that kind of stuff because I'm a distribution manager. And I tell Kim, that could be a job that I get. She's like, just send me an email. Tell me you want to interview. You want to interview. So I sent the email. I thought, this is easy. It'd be fun. So they sent me a thing back saying, send us your 30, 60, 90-day plan, and we're going to give you your interview. And right away, I get back home, and we got to get that together. And what ends up happening is I get scared. I get really scared because I'd rather sit up here and tell you about my life in front of all of you than walk through something like that. Because I'm going to interview with the president of Operations of Excellence, who has a master's degree at Harvard. One of the owners from HIG bought the company as a master's from Yale. Another gentleman has a master's from somewhere else, and me with my GED. And I figured that when you interview me, what's going to happen is you're going to find out that I'm really stupid, that I don't know what I think I know, because you're going to ask me questions. I'm not going to have the answers. So what I do is, on Sunday afternoon, when I'm supposed to do my 30, 60, 90-day plan, I send an email back to them saying, I don't believe I'm qualified. I saw that it said the applicant would need a director of logistics degree, and that I don't think I'd be the right candidate for the job, and I would no longer further pursue it. And I felt this big. I felt that big. Because I was so scared, I didn't want to walk through it. I was willing to lie to her about it. I was so fearful. It was everything in my life. It was terrifying. I'd rather jump off a 20-story building than walk through that. And the next morning, I got an email from them saying, if you change your mind, we'd love to interview you. And if you don't, we enjoy working with you as a distribution manager. I had a night to sleep on that. And I talked to my sponsor about it. I sent him back and I said, I would really love to interview for that job. And I'm really sorry that today I let my fear get in the way of my success. And I had my 30, 60, 90 plan. And I shot it off. And what ended up happening was, Kim asked me a little bit later, what happened to your interview? It got canceled. But it's the truth. I lied by omission, but it was true. It got canceled, but I didn't tell her why. But in the meantime, before I had to lie to her, because I didn't have to lie to her, because I haven't lied to her yet. It was just a thought. It's like the three frogs, they haven't jumped yet. They haven't made that decision. I'm thinking about it, though. So what ended up happening was, is they reaffirmed my interview. So here's my interview. Now it's 8 o'clock on Thursday morning, which was great because I had 3 days to think about this. And I had a 45-minute interview. And I was the most positive, energetic person. Every question they had for me, I had to answer for them. And after the 45 minutes were up, they said, Anthony, we want to thank you. You were so energetic and positive that you were infectious. And we want to thank you for having this 45 minutes with you. And you know what? 10 years ago, I didn't get the job because I was probably an asshole to everybody. And I treated everybody not the way I wanted to be treated, the way I thought that how I, because angry people are angry and hurt people hurt people. I was a very angry, hurt person, doing the best I could. And program gets to show me that working the steps. And what, another special part of my life was last year at Catalina, last May, I was able to make my ninth step and make my amends to my wife for how I was in that first 7 years of marriage. And that was very powerful. And you know, our marriage is the best relationship I've ever been in today. And if it wasn't for working traditions, you know, tradition one, it talks about, you know, our common good between us. And I never thought about the three of us with our son. And you know what? I got to remember that Kim invited me into her family. And I'm so grateful for that because both of my sons aren't around today. My one son's in Georgia, and my other one's lost in his disease, so I don't talk to him a lot. And it's just, I just can't tell you how grateful I am just by how different things are today. And I felt so good after that interview. And 2 days ago, I got the phone call from the president of operations saying, we're going with somebody else, but we're still talking about that interview. And you know what, I told him, I want to thank you. I go, it was a win-win-win. I got 45 minutes with three of the best guys in the company. I was applying for an amazing job, and I already have an amazing job. And you know, it's different things today. Before, I always wrote up people. I wrote them hard. I put them back really wet. You know, today when they asked me, if you were the fleet manager and you're going to put down to all the different people, and they don't want to listen to how you want to do the new operations, how you're going to run it, how are you going to make them do that? I said, you know what? I'm going to call them up and ask them, what's wrong with it? Do they have any other ideas, suggestions? We make them feel part of, then they're more apt to do it, just like we do in program. And then, unfortunately, if I exhaust and give them all the tools that I can give to help them, then maybe my company needs to look at other options. Maybe they're not good for the company moving forward. And that's how I answer my questions today. You know what? We don't shoot our wounded anymore. That's what I learned in program. And you know what, another amazing thing, you know what, my son Cody, you know what, I didn't get to have the opportunity to go buy a first car with either of those guys. And you know what, my stepson Tim, we fought for years. Whenever I get mad at his mom, I would take it out on her kid. And I would always, that's how it went, that's how it was. And without even noticing, that's what I was doing. And I made my amends to him as well. And the last month has been car shopping on Craigslist. Could you imagine what that's been like? Because people all are not honest, right? We are in total. Trust me on that, you know? And we went to a bunch of places, and you know, a couple nights ago we went to Oxnard, just me and him went. And we found the car. And I got to go around the car like a father and show him out with a flashlight how we check things and how we do the bartering and negotiation things. And you know what? I was driving home, I got tears in my eyes. Because the glasses that I have on today, I was able to see what a miracle that was. That my relationships are so much better because I live in the present today. My relationship with my mother is better than it's ever been. Even today, I still have mommy issues with her. But I'm still trying. I still call her. I still do the best. But you know what? She's so negative and hard to talk to. You know, I have my hard time with her, you know? And there's no alcohol and there's no drinking in our house. We had parties come over, my son would come over. We let everybody know that my son's coming over and there's no alcohol today. And you know what? They come or they don't. Because you know, our group as a whole, that's the best thing about it. And then the second tradition really talks about, you know, leaders are trusted servants, they don't govern. You know, I never realized all those years I was playing God. And that's a powerful thing because I was always responsible for every failures and successes when I got involved. And that's what I did without even knowing it. And you know what? And I didn't realize, like Tradition 3 talks about, I could accept everybody as is. You know, it's amazing how I found Kim, how beautiful and everything I loved about her and how funny and cute she was. But after years, I find reasons I don't like her. And I forget about all those good qualities she had. And you know what? Al-Anon's given me those things back. My relationship with everybody in my family is good today, really good today. You know, my sister, unfortunately, she's doing the best that she can and she's been affected by alcoholism. And you know what, the guys, I'm so grateful for the men I sponsor today. I wanna plug that, you know what? Every week when we come in here, old school sponsorship, get in the car. We drive from Santa Clarita, we come up to have dinner, we come to the meeting and we drive home. We do brother meetings once a month. You know, we do these things. We work the traditions on our brothers' meetings because without working those traditions, my relationships never would improve because after I did my steps, I improved. But after I started working the traditions, my life improved. And as for my sponsor, I love about him, so I'm talking to him today. You know, just keeping current with him. I talk to him 2 to 3 times a week regardless of what's happening. Even just call and see how he's doing. And he says, Anthony, so when are we going to plan our next tradition date? What date are you available? I love how he asked me because I need him to say, 2 weeks from Tuesday at 7, let's meet. I need that gentle nudge because left to my own devices, I get caught up in life and then I get absorbed in other things other than myself. But I got to remember to keep the focus on myself. And I just want to thank you guys for allowing me to come and have the, this is absolute honor and privilege to be able to come here and speak. And you know, I love you guys so much. And all the men in this room that I spend Thursday night with, because I go to 3 meetings. I have my parent focus meeting on Monday night. I have my men's meeting I come to on Thursday night. I need parent, I need men, and I need the co-ed meeting. I do on Saturday mornings. When I do all three of those, and I call my sponsor, I work the traditions and steps. I stay current, and I'm honest, and be willing and teachable. My life changed. And thank you all for letting me share. Have a good night.